Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, December 12th, 2014. It's Pi UTC 314.
Whoa!
Yeah, there you go.
Whoa!
I'm Sam Binter. Yvonne Bo is here. Finally, after a long absence. Well, I guess it was only 2 weeks.
But, you know. It was a couple of weeks. Well, I mean, I got the first to travel. And then you were sick. We all were sick. I mean, we all of us were sick. I mean, at this house, we had a. I guess that's, I don't know. It's maybe happened to you.
It's par for the course. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but this is the first time in my household that we all wound up getting sick
at the same time.
That sucks,
doesn't it?
Oh God, it sucks.
Because you want at least like one of the adults.
Now to be feeling here's good. The thing. We were. I will say this. The peak of the disease happened at separate occasions for me and my wife.
Yeah, that generally is the... That's generally the
case. So you
would have to really have bad luck to have it perfectly
timed. So my wife was feeling the worst, like, on Sunday, Monday kind of a thing, and I was taking care of stuff. And then I left town, and I came back Wednesday. I thought my wife would feel better by Tuesday, but she didn't. So I actually had to call my mother, who was actually traveling out of town as well. You know, typical for my family, you know. So I said, listen, when you land, could you just go to my wife's house because she's feeling awful and she's by herself? So I'm like, okay. So she headed over. So then the next day I wake up and I'm heading to the airport and I'm feeling like, uh-oh, this is not good. And I mean, I got on the plane and I covered up my mouth. I just didn't want to spread any germs to anybody. Just used a lot of hand sanitizer to cover my mouth. I got home and I just crashed into bed. That's that, you know, pretty much. It was just awful, you know. So anyway, yeah. So that was like us being sick. And so, but I'm here, you know. So
excellent. And I'll tell you before we get started in earnest here, right now, at this very moment, actually, the area that I am in has a weather
warning. Area 51?
Yeah, Area 51. That's right. That's where I'm from. Okay. I crash landed in Roswell a few decades ago.
Anyway,
there are all sorts of storm warnings. There's a wind storm that's due to pass through the county.
Does that have anything to do with the storms that hit California?
Yeah, same weather system. We've had a bunch of rain from it too, but actually, as we were starting to record, like literally in the last 3 minutes, I've started to hear the wind gusts coming outside, because all kinds of places south of here have the wind has already started. Heading.
Well, what's the wind expect the gusts to? What's the top speeds?
Oh God! Now you're putting me on the spot.
50 miles an hour.
What?
50 miles an hour? 60? I don't know what.
I don't know.
Oh gosh! Now I'm gonna have to look it up.
I wasn't paying attention.
I'll look it up.
But anyway, the point is there.
High wind warning. Here we go. Special statement. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. Yvonne's looking it up from.
Gusts to 60 miles an hour. Yeah, damn.
There you go. Oh, I mean, it's not sustained winds at 60 like you would.
Well,
like,
it's sustained 30 to 40.
Yeah. So not
so
bad, right?
35 is tropical storm wind right there.
Yeah.
So you're talking about sustained tropical storm winds with 60 mile an hour gusts.
It's just now starting to pass through, and all kinds of places are having power outages and stuff. So if suddenly this podcast just stops, hey, that's why.
Okay. Now, check this out. I just looked at the temperature in Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I know you don't live exactly in Seattle, but, you know.
Yeah, a little north of enough. Seattle, whatever, yeah.
Close enough. And where I'm at, we are within 1 degree.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, at this point. Yeah, it's been unseasonably cool down here.
It's been unseasonably warm here.
There you go. Okay.
So we get to match.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, enough of the preliminaries. I think we have two real topics for this week, and then more if we end up having time. One is, of course, the torture report that came out earlier this week.
Residual coughing, sorry.
Yeah. I'll cough, too. There you go.
That's great. Well, I did get, I did buy this.
Faucet detected. Take precautions.
Okay, if we need to, if we need that at some point.
What the hell is that?
It's a my bullshit button for my office.
Oh yeah, bullshit button. Okay.
There you go.
It's like the easy button, but it's bullshit.
But it's a bullshit button, yes.
Yes. And also, the government shutdown / Cromnibus / whatever, as we are speaking, you know, Congress is doing things with that. So this is breaking news as we're doing this. So it'll be out of date by the time I put it out, even though that'll only be, you know, later today on Friday, hopefully. Anyway, that's the gist of it. And then we've got, if we finish up with that kind of stuff, there's follow up on Uber.
Well, I got the Sony Pictures the House League. The House passed the bill already, so we better.
Well, no, but now the Senate has to take
it. Oh, the Senate has a power. Okay, all right.
The House passed it about an hour ago as we're recording this, and it's heading to the Senate as we speak. They have not scheduled the time of the Senate vote yet, but it's expected tonight because at midnight Eastern time, the money runs out unless the president has signed something by midnight.
Okay.
Although, as we've seen before, they sort of finesse it. Like, if they end up passing it at 2 in the morning or something, and the president signs it at 6 a.m., everything will continue as if nothing had happened.
Right.
Yeah. Even though, technically speaking, midnight's a deadline. Uber, the Sony Pictures leak, I don't want to get into a whole talk about this, but I just wanted to mention that we have had a few additional developments on the 2016 presidential front in the last few weeks since we last talked about it. James Webb in Virginia announced he's running. He's a Democrat. Rick Santorum is running.
Yes!
I knew you would be excited about that.
All right!
Which means another few months of you bugging me to look around in my garage for a tape of your interview with
him. Yes! Yes!
Which, if I haven't found it in the last 4 years, not a big chance of me
and
finding it.
And I pulled out the your audio tape player, okay, which I have it. So yes, I do have.
Yep.
If you know, if you were to find the damn tape, you know, I do have the player, you know.
So he's made it clear that he's probably running. Who else? Rick Perry in Texas has made it clear that he's probably running. He was in an interview lately where somebody asked him directly, "Do you think you're smart enough to be president?" And his answer was, "IQ doesn't really matter for that."
That's beautiful.
We've got both Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney making noises that look like they're leaning towards yes in terms of running.
It's quite interesting to have both Mitt and Jeb and all these guys in at the same time.
Although I have heard on a number of occasions that like part of Romney's thought process is if Jeb runs, he won't. But you know, I don't know, whatever. We'll see. I mean, and we have an effort going on with a number of left-wing groups to try to draft Elizabeth Warren to run as well, although she keeps saying no. And that's where we are.
Okay.
Nothing much else to say there. So having said that, I don't know. Any more introductory things before like we jump into things for real?
None that I can think of.
Okay, let's take a quick break just to make a clean division. And when we come back, we'll talk about torture. Back after this.
Sounds like so much fun.
Oh, yes. And we're back. And you know, right now, my son is actually downstairs being good. My dog is at my office door barking because he wants to come into my office. So hold on just a second. Let me let the dog in. Yes. Yeah, I hear you. Okay, sit down. Sit down. Okay, the dog's here now.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. So, the Senate finally, after, you know, it's been completed for over a year, and there was all kinds of back and forth and hand-wringing about what would be redacted and what wouldn't and all kinds of other things. In any case, it was finally released this Tuesday. This is... The report that was written only by the Democratic portion of the Intelligence Committee. The Republicans long ago, I mean, this thing's been in the works for years. The Republicans long ago decided not to participate because they felt like the Democrats were approaching it in a way where they already had their conclusion in mind and they were just collecting evidence for it as opposed to doing a true investigation. At least that's the official Republican line. And so they didn't participate. And they apparently they wanted to include a minority report, but that did not happen. The CIA did include a rebuttal, however, that they included. And basically this thing confirms all of the worst things that we'd heard about over the last few years with the torture program, and adds all sorts of new details on specific things that were done and specific cases and things like that. And this, by the way, what was released was only the 500-page summary of
not the detail.
What was right. it? The 7,000 page?
Yeah.
6,000 or 7,000 page actual pages report. And of course, what we've had is this has all become incredibly partisan because you have an almost down the line division with a few notable exceptions of Democrats coming out and saying, you know, this is awful. Look what happened. This blah, blah, blah. And the Republicans saying this is an unfair, biased report, and it should never have been released. Now, a couple of the notable exceptions are, of course, Senator John McCain supported the release of the report and made a fairly well-received speech on it on the Senate floor. And then the other notable exception is, of course, most of the Obama administration, who had also been fighting for the last year to keep this thing from being released. The CIA director himself this morning gave a fairly long press conference where he described his objections to it. And that's the rough outline of it. I know some of my reactions, and I'll be ready to vent in a second or two. Yvonne, what are your thoughts?
I read, some of the articles summarizing it. Obviously, I didn't have time to read the 500 pages of the entire report.
Me too,
report.
By the way. I tweeted a link to the full report, but I didn't read more than the first two or three pages of it. And for the rest, I relied on summaries from various news outlets and commentators that I read regularly.
I actually went and, tweeted out the link to Senator McCain's address regarding it, who, look, not like I'm a guy who's a fan of John McCain by any stretch, but the reality is that he really summarized it quite well, the reality about this. The information contained in there, real enhanced interrogation techniques were torture. The torture that was done produced no credible evidence that no real additional evidence to safeguard our country. And in the end, it was just a country that talks about respecting the law. What we did there was just absolutely shameful. And to add from my perspective, I I believe that, I don't know, if there are additional details in that detail report, and somebody somehow in their fucking brain tortured the facts to go and, like, make it that they believed that this was not an illegal act, but somebody should go to prison for some people need to go to prison over this.
And nobody's going to.
And I know that a lot of people are saying that nobody is going to, but somebody should be going, some people should be going to prison over this.
Oh yeah. I think many people should be going to prison, and not just lower level people who did this, but high level people who enacted policy going potentially up to the vice president and president of the United States. Because I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever that all of this happened because it was made clear by those people at the top level that this is what they wanted. Now, there's some dispute over exactly how much of the detail they knew, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, either way, if it's like if it was one of these deals where it's like, go do what you need to do and don't tell me about it. Well,
plausible deniability. Well,
that may be plausible deniability, but come on. Now, here's the thing, though, and here's what, you know, because the Justice Department did their own investigation a couple years ago and decided that they weren't going to charge anybody whatsoever with anything. And one of the main reasons is because before these acts happened, the CIA went to the Justice Department for advice on what was legal and what was not. And the Justice Department came up with guidelines that allowed most of this stuff. There may be a few cases where they wouldn't be.
Who the hell is the jerk off? I'm sorry. Well, then whoever the hell, the people that concocted that cockamamie stupid bullshit should go to prison because they it just was not. I don't know what the hell.
Basically what the Justice Department has said right now is that because the activities occurring were happening within the guidelines that the Justice Department itself, initiated, they wouldn't be right to prosecute any
of. Well, then the son of a bitches of the Justice Department need to go to jail then.
Yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that. I mean, look, and here's the bottom line, and this is the same thing. There are a few bits here. One, this shows very, very clearly why, in general, there needs to be an independent mechanism to investigate actions of anything that goes on within the executive branch.
And the problem is that we had something like that, but that was also crafted in a way that created a partisan witch hunts. You remember the frickin' Ken Starr and the special prosecutor and the special prosecutor we had in the 80s and 90s.
Those prosecutors had fairly narrow jurisdictions. I'm thinking that there needs to be something.
But they weren't narrow. If you remember, that was one of the problems, one of the reasons they killed it, because they gave them supposedly some investigative leeway and they wound up broadening the scope in a way that everybody's like, a second.
Right. They broadened the scope. But for instance, they were investigating things that happened, say, within the president's office, whereas, you know, we're talking about stuff here that potentially involved wrongdoing within the president's office, within the Justice Department. Within the CIA, within other intelligence agencies, within the military. And so the problem is, if you're going to investigate any sort of action that occurs anywhere within the executive branch, which basically is the entire fucking government except for the Congress and the courts, that you need somebody who, in the end, doesn't report to the president.
I think it needs to somehow wind up in the judiciary.
I would agree. Like there should be, and there isn't right now. There should be an investigative division within the judiciary who's able to, you know, do these kinds of searches that isn't answerable to the president. I mean, hell, you could make an argument that the whole damn FBI should, you know, report up to the Supreme Court instead of to the president or something.
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm okay with, like, that the FBI being inside none of that purview. But what we're talking about is an investigator of the investigators. Okay, yes. All right. Yes. And right now, you can't have the investigators investigate themselves. It just doesn't work. It hasn't worked.
Yeah, I mean, even this report from the Senate committee, you know, even though the CIA railed against it, what they had to rely on was CIA documents. They had no independent ability to do anything other than request that the CIA give them documents. And even there, the CIA stonewalled in a variety of areas that have been documented. And they had this whole thing with the CIA spying on the Senate staffers and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, look, we need some way to investigate the investigators, and we don't have it right now. And you see that, there's just the end result here is that bad actions happened and there's going to be absolutely no fucking consequence because the Obama administration decided very early on, like within weeks of coming into office, if not before, that they weren't going to go after these guys. You know, they weren't going to go after.
They did shut everything down.
They made a very clear, conscious decision, and this came from the top, this came from Obama, that they were not going to go after the actions that the previous administration took on this subject, or practically on any subject, but specifically on this subject. And everything since then has followed that script. And, you know, the justification is, of course, as the executive, he doesn't want some future president to decide that they didn't like what he did. I mean, because you can make all the same arguments that you can about the torture in terms of, you know, signature drone strikes and things along those lines says, you know, well, this is clearly illegal too. This is an act of war.
What somebody said the other day is just to acknowledge that that something criminal happened and they should just, you know, that the president should just pardon them.
Right. I don't fully buy that argument.
But you understand what I'm saying?
But I understand. No, I mean, it was the freaking ACLU that said that.
Right. Yes.
They said, look, we recognize that there are difficulties in actually doing any sort of prosecution here. But if you pardon them, that leaves.
Acknowledges that the act was criminal and that they're being pardoned for it.
Yes. I can almost buy that, but I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
It's better than better than nothing.
Well, let's be real though. Obama's not going to do that either.
Who knows? Shit. I mean, honestly, who knows? We got 2 years to go on this fucking fucking train wreck. Stranger things would happen. I'll tell you what.
But look, here's the thing too, and I wanted to discuss this part too. One of my first reactions on seeing this damn report was, first of all, a significant portion of the report concentrated on the question of whether or not this torture was effective. And my first reaction was, I can't believe they even conceded that. Because they should have just put in a paragraph at the very beginning of the report saying whether or not the torture was ineffective is irrelevant because the torture was illegal and the laws in question that make it illegal, which, you know, we've signed international treaties and domestic legislation implementing those treaties, basically say this stuff is not allowed and it is not a defense to say you are ordered. It is not a defense to say that there's a national emergency. There's not a defense. And it lists all of these things that people are claiming are like, well, here's why we did it. Because everybody's saying, well, you understand after 9/11, we were afraid of another attack and blah, blah, blah. Understand the context, understand the environment. Well, all of the relevant laws about torture specifically say that there are no exceptions for that sort of thing. And so that my initial reaction was this report should have started out with a statement that says whether or not it was effective is absolutely irrelevant. Torture is illegal. Let us document how it happened and what happened. And
yeah, but the worst thing about it is that it wasn't. It was completely ineffective. So we, you know, these assholes go and do this idiocy, and then and the worst thing is that they for absolutely nothing. Nothing.
And of course, they still dispute that. They still.
I know they do. But here's the thing.
All of the disputes since this report came out. Every single person that has been defending the CIA on this has been defending the question of whether or not it worked. Nobody is disputing the actual facts that they did it.
Right.
And that's why, like, you know, look, they should have just said, it doesn't matter if it was effective or not. There could be an argument on that. We could talk about that forever. Irrelevant.
Right.
It was illegal. Against these laws, and not only did you do it anyway, but you engaged in all of these acts to help cover it up, including, you know, the appendix of the damn 500-page summary includes a table of all the times the CIA director lied to Congress.
It wasn't just illegal. It's immoral.
Absolutely.
It's like, forget about it, illegal. Even if there was one of the things I want to say, it's fucking immoral.
So I absolutely positively think that people should be prosecuted. People should be going to jail, blah, blah, blah.
Regardless of their motivations, it's disgusting what they did.
And one of the things that I do want to point out here that did make me think a couple times about this is, unlike a lot of people who are criticizing this stuff, I've actually been consistent on this, because you can compare it to the Snowden case, where a whole bunch of people are saying that, well, yeah, what he did was illegal, but he had a high moral purpose. He shouldn't be whatever. From the beginning, I've said, you know, if you're going to engage in an act of civil disobedience, whether it be torturing or releasing classified documents because you think it's for the greater good, okay, but then you have to be ready to suffer the consequences for it.
That's right.
And I think that's just as true of Snowden as it is for this stuff. And, like, if these guys truly thought that they were absolutely positively doing the right thing, then they should be like, yes, I did it. It was against the law. Go ahead and arrest me. I will suffer the penalties. I think it was worth it because of X, Y, and Z.
Right.
But I don't see any of these guys lining up to do that.
No.
You know. But
chance of that.
But I will say, I kept saying my initial thoughts were they shouldn't have addressed how effective or not it is at all because of everything that I just outlined, and they should just concentrate on, you know, this is illegal, this is immoral, look at what you did, your reasons for doing it are irrelevant, the efficacy is irrelevant, you shouldn't have done it. However, I've started to go reassess my opinion on that for one reason. Looking at the reaction to this over the last few days and listening to all the arguments on both sides, and also, most importantly, looking at the results of a few polls on this of the general public, more than 60% of the American public think that the torture was absolutely fine.
No, I know. I mean, we talked about the fact that you get a whole bunch of people that seem to be just perfectly okay, all hunky dory with
with torture, with drone strikes, with
intrusions of privacy, all of this stuff. Yes. I mean, they just
surveillance.
I mean, the people just don't seem to give a fuck anymore.
Yeah, all of these things, and it looks like a clear majority of the American public basically thinks, okay, if that's what you need to do to keep us safe, that's fine. And oh, by the way,
right,
they're just a bunch of, you know, of Arab Muslims, and who gives a shit what we do to them? They're all right. A bunch of terrorists.
Right.
Now, I'll point out that one of the things that was in this report was, out of the 20-some people that ended up having enhanced interrogation done to them, a significant fraction, and I forget what exactly the fraction was, but it was non-trivial, turned out they didn't even have the right guy.
Right.
One of the one guy who died because we left him alone in a cold room naked except for a sweatshirt after having brutally tortured him in other ways, and he died of hypothermia, was the wrong guy. It turns out he wasn't even the guy that we thought was a bad guy. He was a complete innocent. And there were a bunch of those that were involved in this. And we know we're still, just this last week, we took some people from Guantanamo and let them loose in Uruguay. You know, it was Uruguay, right?
Anyway, yes, it was.
Yeah, and these are people that, and there's still more people in Guantanamo that have been cleared of having any wrongdoing on anything whatsoever. That we have no place to send them to, so they're still in freaking cells in Guantanamo. And it's like, really? Really? And so, yeah, it's not... Okay, so, yeah, you can have the argument about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and the other guy, I forget his name, who's also a 9/11 mastermind, quote-unquote, you know, about, okay, maybe they knew more and blah, 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 and we definitely knew who they were. But there are a bunch of these other people, too. And even with these mastermind folks... It's still not the right thing to do. But a significant portion of the American populace thinks that, you know, they're just a bunch of freaking terrorists. All of them are. Not just...
Yes,
bro. Not just this one. Not just anybody from that whole region. Who the fuck cares? You know, do whatever you need to do. They're not people anyway. You know, and they don't deserve rights, or, you know, and I'm slightly exaggerating for effect, but only slightly.
Only slightly. There's a lot of people that do think that they don't care.
Yeah.
So
and I think that's, and this is why, like, I understand why they put all of the arguments about effectiveness in here, because the American public as a whole, if they'd come out and just said effectiveness doesn't matter, what you did was illegal, end of story, the CIA apologists would say, well, we had to do what we did to keep the country safe, and screw you guys, right, the American public agrees with us.
Which is why I think it was very important to show them, hey, bozos, not only was it illegal, immoral, and all of these things, but, oh, by the way, it didn't work!
Right. Now, even so, there's a lot of people disputing that it did work in this way, although the CIA director backed down from that significantly in his news conference today, although it's very weasel-wordish type stuff, so,
well, you know. Jesus, man, if I would have had to be the guy giving that press conference, Jesus Christ, I mean, my weasel words would have been a frickin', my God, it's a good thing, I'm like, my God, it would have been like the weasel word dictionary, like, day.
So, like, for instance, he made the distinction of, you know, intelligence gained from torture versus intelligence gained from people we tortured after we tortured them. And saying that you can't, you know, he admitted you can't have a causal relationship. That, you know, okay, the fact that they told you something that might be useful a week or two or three after you tortured them, maybe they would have told you anyway if you'd done something else. But who the hell knows?
Right.
And he acknowledged,
you know, maybe they would have told you earlier if you hadn't been torturing them, for God's sakes, and had them, like, in sensory deprivation or whatever, where they were, like, freaking hallucinating. They were so fucking, like, out of their minds. I mean, they could have, you know, they would have said anything at that point, that it was just all nonsense. And a lot of times unusable crap. Because they were so fucked up, they couldn't even talk coherently.
Yeah, and they admitted there was a lot of false and bad information as well in between the bits that were good. You know, and... what was I thinking? I was about to go somewhere, but I've forgotten.
Well, I mean, I guess the one thing is, you know, I had this whole thing where they had like 16 excerpts of some of the worst stuff, for example. Okay. There were a couple. This is what was interesting. Torture tactics caused detainees to develop psychosis, leading to hallucinations, paranoia, and attempts to self-mutilate. Throughout the program, multiple CIA's detainees who were subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques and extended isolation exhibited psychological and behavioral issues, including hallucinations, paranoia, insomnia, and attempts at self-harm and self-mutilation. Multiple psychologists identified the lack of human contact experienced by detainees as a cause of psychiatric problems. So that was one thing that was an issue. There was hello? Somewhere in here where
Hello.
Alex, you're interrupting.
Hello.
I'm texting your mom.
No, don't. Hello.
Say hi to your mother real quick.
Hello.
Hello.
Gee you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Gee you.
Okay. Talk to you later. Okay, he's left again.
So, sleep deprivation led a detainee to hallucinate that dogs mauling and killing his sons.
Yep.
In October 2003, the CIA interrogated Arsala Khan, an Afghan national in his mid-50s, who was believed to have assisted Osama bin Laden in his escape through Tora Bora. After 56 hours of standing sleep deprivation, Arsala Khan was described as barely able to enunciate and being visibly shaken by his hallucinations depicting dogs mauling and killing his sons and family, according to CIA cables. Arsala Khan stated that the interrogator was responsible for killing them and feeding them to the dogs. Now, my point is, how the hell could you get any useful information out of a guy in that state?
Yeah.
There's
all sorts of information in the report as well about basically the CIA didn't have in-house knowledge on how to do this stuff, so they hired some contractors who didn't have in-house knowledge of this either.
Right.
And were making this shit up as they went along, basically. Yeah. I mean, apparently they the people they hired were quote-unquote experts in resisting interrogation, but that's different.
That's a totally different thing.
Yeah, none of this was done in any sort of, hey, we've had, you know, centuries of information on what tends to work and what doesn't
work.
Nothing
this
like
just,
that.
Oh, this is all bullshit. This is just, they were just, this is idiotic.
And the people they hired to actually engage in the activities, these weren't sort of the best of the best well-trained people either. One of the things that's in the report is they picked a bunch of yahoos who had previous history of violence and behavior issues.
I mean, you know, this one was just the most disgusting. Five prisoners were subjected to rectal hydration or rectal feeding.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
What this was not some sort of sanitary, you know, medical procedure. They took the prisoner's dinner.
Yes.
And threw it in a blender.
Yep.
And then shoved it up their ass.
Basically. I mean, I'm just like, how, you know, they, I mean, really? Really? Anyway, yeah. Well, and like you said, it may well be that nobody will ever be made account for this stupidity. It's just absolutely
disgusting
thing.
One of the things, the thing I was going to mention before that I did want to mention that we sort of touched on, was that a number of people basically on the right wing, were tweeting all kinds of things about, you know, how is inconveniencing or making a terrorist uncomfortable for, you know, a few days so bad, but killing people in drone strikes is just fine? And every time I saw that, I wanted to just scream at them. It's not.
Well, neither of them is good. Okay.
I mean, there are a few distinct differences here. One, when somebody is under your control as a prisoner, you have certain additional moral obligations to them,
right,
under laws of war that have existed for a century. Well,
quite a long time, yeah.
And Alex is being removed again by being dragged by his feet, and the dog is barking.
No.
Anyway, there is that additional moral obligation because this is not somebody who is actively at war with you. They're not
right
in a position where they can hurt you in any
we
way, shape, or form.
We grabbed these guys, we tossed them in there, and then we were trying to pump them for information, you know, for the most part.
Now, having said that, there are significant arguments that many of the attacks that we have done via drone and via other mechanisms, frankly, over the last through the Obama presidency, are also unjustified.
Well, and they're killing all kinds of innocent people. Attacks by drone happened in both the Bush and the Obama a presidency.
Yes,
this
yes.
Is not this is this
no, but,
is not,
but Obama significantly ramped it up, and I think
yes, point, no, he ramped
the point,
it up.
The point of the people who are making this comparison is not that they thought the drone strikes were bad. The point is that they're implying that we only care about this because it was a Republican president who do this,
no,
and we're,
no.
we turn a blind eye to the Democrat.
Well, first of all, I don't like the drone strikes either, number one. But the thing that I'm saying about this is two very different. They're two very different acts, and I don't see, you know. I guess. We could debate the drone strikes at a different topic. There's different reasons and different things about that, the why we object to it. But I think the fundamental
point is that argument is a distraction. That look, these are they can both be bad.
They can both be bad.
They can both be bad. There are different issues involved in both. And there may be some people out there. Hell, there may be a significant number of people out there who are really thinking of this only as this is bad because Republicans did it, but anything Obama does is great, no matter what it is.
Well, but that's because there's a lot of idiots. That's not where we're coming from. So, I don't know.
And, what else was there? I don't know. The whole thing is just, you know, depressing as hell.
Yes.
You know, because, I'm ashamed of what was done in my name over this whole time period. We've talked before about how, from 2001 through not quite the end of basically through today, there have been so many. Oh, all of this is like huge overreaction to 9/11, mm-hmm. You know, because we got so scared and so screwed up that, you know, the powers that be, and this was very bipartisan, especially at the beginning, were do whatever the fuck it takes. We don't care. You know, I mean, there was, you know, the stupid Patriot Act was passed by a supermajority of both houses of Congress with support from both parties. Going into Iraq, you know, was supported by both parties. I mean, there were people who objected to each of these, but they were in the minority.
Yes.
And they weren't any of the people at the top. And it took a while for them to start backing off from this. All of this has been, we have done so many things to hurt ourselves, both with, you know, the increased surveillance, domestic security issues, going to war where we didn't have to, and all this crap. It's all been, you know, all of this adds up to way more destruction of things that are important to America as a nation than was accomplished on 9/11 itself.
Yeah. Well, all right. So,
the last thing I want to repeat again is the most depressing thing of all is the polls that show what a large percentage of the American people are fine with all of this. And it's bipartisan. It's Republicans, Democrats. It's all over the place. It's, you know, the majority of Americans think whatever it takes to defend ourselves, whatever it takes to, is absolutely fine. If we have to torture, we have to torture. If we have to kill people, we have to kill people. Do whatever. It's just fine. And that makes me really sad.
Well, there's nothing else I can add to that. So, okay.
Okay, let's take a break and we'll come back and I guess we'll talk about the Cromnibus. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are.
We are.
So I when we were, talking right before we started recording the show, I mentioned Cromnibus, and Yvonne's like, what?
I didn't realize that some people were calling it Cromnibus, okay? I know that we were trying to pass, this thing to avert the shutdown, but I didn't see any, I was watching talking on CNBC today about it, referred to it with that.
Breaking
name.
News right within the last few seconds as we're talking. The Senate okays by voice vote a two-day bridge continuing resolution to avoid shutdown tonight. Funds government through 11:59 p.m. on Saturday, which gives them more time to to do their passage of the Cromnibus.
Doesn't the House have to pass it now?
No, the House already passed it.
No, but the
bridge. House has to pass the bridge too, I guess.
Right.
Or maybe the House did that earlier and I missed it while we were talking. I don't know. Yes, the House would have to pass that too, and the President would have to sign it. But that's easier than the Cromnibus itself. And actually, the fact that they're doing passing by voice vote a two-day continuing resolution actually indicates that the Senate feels like there might be an issue getting the votes to pass the real thing. And they're going to have to do some arm twisting to get there.
Because
otherwise they would have just passed the real thing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the issue here, to bring everybody up to speed, I guess, is that we have the usual sort of thing where however many months ago the government, we passed a budget and funding, etc., that would last us to now. At the time that it happened, the intention was to kick it past the election.
Right.
So they kicked it past the election. Today was the day it was all going to run out. And there would be no government tomorrow if they don't agree to something tonight. So there was a lot of haggling over the last few weeks. They came up with an agreement between the Republicans and Democrats that would basically kick it forward a few more months. This isn't a long-term thing. It was going to kick it through to like March or something. But it was going to put it into the new Congress to let the new fully Republican Congress figure out what they wanted to do next year. And the Democrats, they'd come to an agreement that the Democrats felt comfortable with. And then just within, I think, the last 48 hours, a number of amendments were added that made the Democrats balk. And I think the key was, and I don't know the details of this. I don't know if you do, Yvonne, but there was basically something that was related to potential future bailouts of Wall Street companies by the government, where there'd been laws passed in the wake of 2009 that limited that. And this would be removing those limits and basically, putting the government back in a position where if we had, major failures on Wall Street, the government would once again have the latitude to step in and do stuff.
Well,
and a significant portion of the Democrats didn't like these additional riders. And I think there were a few other things added as well that the Democrats considered to be poison pills. In the House, you basically had a situation where you had enough Republican defectors that they couldn't get to a majority by themselves, but they didn't have enough Democrats going over the side to do it. So the White House started making phone calls and twisting arms to try to get a few Democrats to join the Republicans to get this thing passed to avoid a shutdown.
Well, but here's the thing about this. And look, I know, like, as every time as we get to one of these, it reminds me that no budget again, right? Because we're just doing this on a CR, okay? Again. So we are in a continuing resolution.
Well, remember that's separate. There's the budget is separate from the funding resolutions.
Right. But we have a, but the thing is that we haven't passed the budget anyway. Let's be real.
We passed a budget last year, right? Is it expired? Or is it just the funding that's
expensive? Yeah, I mean, the fiscal year starts October 1st.
The budget actually ends up being completely irrelevant because what actually matters
is the funding. Well, yeah, because you need to start at, right, you need to do all these CRs that actually, you know, but the reality is that we're doing this basically just on a fucking, like, wing and a prayer. I mean, there is no strategy behind this. This is another one of these that we're just, you know, I'm surprised that they were passing something that was like what I heard today. Well, they're trying to do funding through September 2015. I was like, really? They're going to do that? I was like, damn. I don't know. Here's the bigger thing about this. Everybody has like sat down and decided, as sometimes happens, it's better to do nothing than to do something, right? Mm-hmm. So what we're doing with this, a lot of it is, you know, you've heard some of these details going back and forth. There's no major changes that we're doing to how we work in order to get this passed. You know, we're not doing any overhauls. We're not doing this. We're not doing that. What's happening is that tax revenues are going up. And so revenues are going up while nobody agrees on doing anything on anything related to expenditures, really, other than freeze a whole bunch of stuff. So revenues go up, expenses stay relatively the same, deficit goes down. I mean, pretty simple. Not in any strategic fashion, just because, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. I mean, it's as simple as that. You know,
so maybe
it's a good thing that they're just a bunch of like fucking
of the riders. I mean, and I agree that on those high level budgetary issues, we're basically just kicking the can down the road at essentially current levels.
Sure.
Some of the riders that were included here that Democrats were really upset about are repealing a provision of the Dodd-Frank financial reform law, which prevented FDIC insured banks from trading custom swaps. That's one thing. It blocked funding for the implementation of marijuana legalization in D.C.
Yeah.
It raised the amount that individuals can contribute to political parties.
Yeah, okay.
And it allows coal plants overseas to receive more U.S. government loans.
Who oversees to receive more loans?
Coal plants.
Coal plants overseas. God. Talk about the shit that we put into a fucking budget. I mean, really?
Continuing resolution, even. Not a budget.
Yeah, continuing resolution. Gosh.
But like, basically, these additions were the things that the Democrats were holding things up on. And, of course, people were saying that, you know, what, now the Democrats are going to cause a government shutdown because they're the ones not agreeing to this? And why does everybody think that now, you know, Elizabeth Warren is a hero because she's saying she's going to block this stuff where, you know, a few months ago they were talking about, you know, Ted Cruz or whatever doing the same kind of stuff in the opposite direction, and he's evil for shutting down the government.
Well, because they just added him at the last fucking minute. You know, Jesus. I mean, you had something that you had agreed on, and then somebody decides, oh, wait, let's add this. Oh, wait, let's add that. You know, shit.
Anyway, in the end, at least on the House side, after the Obama administration did some strong arming, they got 57 Democrats to go along with it and passed it on the House. As we've seen, it looks like, you know, who knows if there's more action tonight, I'll append a correction to the show. But, you know, it looks like we're probably going to have a situation where they're going to kick this a couple days further down the road. And most likely the Senate will end up passing this in the next couple of days.
So do we count this as one of your predictions so we can count like a couple of weeks from now that you screwed up or no? Not an extra prediction?
No.
Oh, okay.
Only the predictions we made on our prediction show count.
Okay. All right. Just check. All right.
Because otherwise, right now, I could predict what happened in the last, you know, 12 months, and I'd have a pretty good record. Except for the things I misremembered.
No, I'm talking predicting stuff in the future.
No, I know.
And no. You can't predict stuff in the past.
I'd be pretty good at it.
Oh, I'm sure you could do quite well.
Although I'd probably still mess some stuff up.
That's what I was going to say.
Anyway, it looks like this will go through unless we get some last minute, like Elizabeth Warren doing some, you know, things to try to block it, or, you know, the Democrats decide that despite the fact that the president wants this passed, they're going to filibuster this thing. So there are a number of ways that it could still be blocked. But the fact that the president wants it to happen means that I'm thinking we might get some more, you know, a little bit more drama before it happens. But in the end, this will go through. And, you know, if we, and just like the last time one of these happened where we technically missed a deadline, but we fixed it pretty quickly.
Right.
That's the worst that would happen today. But I think what's clear based on what happened in the House is it's probably the same thing. I'm already seeing like there's a tweet that's coming by as I'm writing from Paul Kane, linking to a Washington Post article. The Warren wing of the Democratic Party flexed its muscle, came up short, but sent its signal for the year ahead on the Hill in 2016. You know, basically, you know, okay, they don't have the votes to actually stop this, but they're going to start making noise. The liberal Democrats are. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, good time to start making noise when the Democrats lose the majority, I guess. But
Yeah, genius. Yeah, we're flexing some muscles now.
That's the best time to flex your muscle, when you know it can't actually have any effect.
Right. Exactly.
Then you can be. And I mean, frankly, this is the same thing the Republicans were doing when they were out of power.
I agree. I totally agree.
You know, you pass all of these laws. You pass all these things. I mean, the Republicans have been doing this, you know, with their repeal Obamacare and all kinds of other things where they pass this sort of ideologically pure thing that, you know, is the base really, really loves, knowing full well
it's not that going
it will never go through the whole process and be signed into law. And therefore, they would never, ever have to deal with any possible consequences of it actually coming into law. They can just go, rah, 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 look how strongly we're supporting this idea.
How many times they passed a freaking repeal of Obamacare, I guess? I don't know.
And this is, okay, so now we're going to see this from the Democrats. Okay, whatever, you know, because, you know, frankly, and actually, you're probably going to start seeing this from liberal Democrats in Congress and conservative Republicans in Congress, because they know none of it on either side is going to get through. You know, because the liberals in Congress aren't going to get it through Congress because they don't have the majority. Conservatives in Congress aren't going to get it through because Obama would veto it. And so you're going to get all kinds of things that are playing to both ideological bases, but which are going nowhere.
Right.
And, you know, that's how it's going to play for the next 2 years. Okay, fine, whatever. But yeah, we still do have the question. I guess the Senate Democrats could block this if they wanted to. But, you know, that's, you know, it's a hard position to be in for Senate Democrats to do that when the president is on the other side of that issue. Admittedly, he is a lame duck, but still.
Yeah. But yeah, I know. But still, I don't think they're going to do that. But
well, because they know just as well. The Democrats know very well that if they block a bill that's going to fund the government that the Republicans are in favor of and the president is in favor of.
No, and the president, they're going to
And the
look
government
like
gets shut down
No.
Saw what happened to Republicans when they shot down
they're
the
not,
government.
No, yeah, they're not. I don't think they're that stupid.
Yeah, the Democrats aren't going to do that. So, I mean, Warren and her wing of the party may make some noise. But and who knows, they may even if they get this 2-day extension, maybe they get some other amendments in there that undo some of the things they don't like the most, or put something else in that they like in exchange or something like that. But even that, probably not. Probably this thing is just going to go through after a little bit more noise.
Right.
Ah,
anyway, okay. right. So
that's it for the Cromnibus.
That's it for the. Well, you know what? We got an hour of a show.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to talk about Uber or Sony, let's take a break and come back. Otherwise, we can wrap it up.
Yeah. Oil, by the way, oil is under $60 a barrel.
Oh yeah, there was that too. Yeah.
Well, no, I did have that aside from the shutdown. Same time talking about. Well, I figured a little bit about the economy since the shutdown, a little bit of impact on the economy. I will tell you this: I filled up. I'll tell you something. Both of our cars at home take premium gas. They're relatively, you know, look, I have cars that are not, they're not hybrid economy, but they're not gas guzzlers. They're good. Okay, all right. I'm somewhere in the middle there. I would like them to be more fuel efficient, but next time I'm going to get something better. But the other day, I got to tell you, I went to fill up my wife's have a compact SUV. Okay, all right. And I went to fill it up and it was only $35. I will tell you something. I don't remember the last time that I paid so little to fill up that car. Okay. I saw the total and I'm like, what? It's not $50? You know, it's not 60? Wait a minute. It's what? I was just kind of, I was like, I gotta tell you, I felt good.
And in speaking along those lines, we've talked about alternative power stuff in recent shows. Sometime in the last couple of weeks, I think the Tesla, the car makers, made an announcement of they're also building a plant where they're going to be selling large fixed batteries for the purpose of being storage for people who are going off grid with solar.
Oh, great. Oh, so, that sounds good.
And so they're going to use the technology they're putting in their cars to make batteries for your house.
You know, the funniest thing is that I'm talking about this, and I had a condo board meeting the other day, and I was thinking about our condo, and somebody actually sent me some paperwork and claim, and actually was thinking about the same thing. They were wondering how, you know, if was this cost effective and how much we could, if we could do it, why can't we do it now? And I said, listen, I said, listen, I've actually studied it in detail right now. My only thing right now, I'm trying to get the money to do that eventually. But the thing is that the outlay for a condo of this size in order to go solar, I made some rough calculations. It's at least $2 million. It's a little bit high. So I, you know, while there is a, I made a calculation, there's a significant return on the investment. The problem is that I don't think I can get somebody right now to loan us $2 million. So basically
the disruptive thing about this battery thing is, instead of when you have excess power, selling it back to the power
company, no, you just store it.
You can just store it yourself, which sure will enable more people to just cut off from the electric grid completely.
Right. Yeah,
and just be self-sufficient.
Yeah, if you've got this massive, like a battery bank to store shit in, I mean, why not?
Which completely changes the dynamics of the entire utility industry.
I gotta tell you more something. People start, you know, doing that. Industry. You know, I keep thinking, and everybody keeps forgetting how technology disrupts industries, and how industries all of a sudden that were big disappear. Okay, all right. I gotta tell you, I mean, the way that this technology is going, I mean, I will tell you that I think the traditional utility that we know of in 50 years is not going to exist anymore.
Yeah, you've mentioned this before.
I'm telling you, this the damn traditional utility as we see it is probably in a lot of places not no longer going to exist.
Because you just plain won't need, you know, your nationwide grid of wires bringing electricity to every house. Instead, houses will just be built with the infrastructure needed to power themselves.
Absolutely, and that's it. Simple as that. I mean, it saves a lot of infrastructure, saves a lot of money. I mean, let's face it, power transmission as it exists right now does lose substantial amount of power during the transmission. I mean, the lines are not perfectly efficient, so there is loss, okay, on the way. I mean, you get rid of the pollution, you get rid of – I mean, there's just so many advantages to it, you know?
And it's not quite there technologically and economically yet, but it's heading in that direction.
It's heading in that direction fast, okay? Which is why sometimes with some of the people, like I know that, you know, I am a person concerned with climate change. I am somebody who, like, I've been doing, like, I, I'm doing everything that I can to reduce our energy consumption as much as we can. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying I'm a perfect, you know, person on that, but I will tell you that, I mean, I know that, for example, we are consuming in this household on average less than 50% the electric that we consumed 5-6 years ago. Okay. On average. Okay. Which I think is a significant thing. I mean, automotive and other stuff, we're down over 50% on that as well. So I'm really happy about that. And I will tell you that, I mean, if I can do, that kind of stuff where I can get completely off grid, I mean, that'd be fantastic. I'm all over that. I want it. I want to try to do it as soon as I can. So,
yep.
And it's going to, I think it's going to be there. So anyway, so we talked about that oil crashing, the other stuff, the ruble was crashing also. So the Russians are getting ready to kill themselves at this point. Well, people were talking about how ineffective all these sanctions were. The ruble went from, like, I think it was like 10. I think it crashed through 55.
Well, so the point I always make about this is I don't think there were, I mean, there was some dispute about how much economic effect sanctions could have, but most people agreed we were in a position we could have a lot of economic effect. The question on sanctions is not whether you can have a significant economic effect. It's whether you can cause policy to change.
Well, I got to tell you something. Maybe it's not stopping them in terms of changing, like, short-term policy. And like I said, the only thing that could have made them change short-term is, like, going to war over Crimea. And, I mean, that made no sense whatsoever. But my point about the other part is that, I mean, let's face it, you've got now where, listen, the Russians are really – really suffering. Putin is like crying foul. He's like going around. I mean, it's like, I mean, now he's like, oh, this is the plot to fuck me over. I'm like, oh, was it, you now, idiot?
Has his approval started falling yet? Or yes, are has. People rallying behind him?
No. His approval started falling substantially. Yes. So that's the other part. This is having an impact on people's perceptions of him. I mean, it's getting where it's having an impact. So let's see. I'm looking at the chart here. So the drop has been like about, what the heck? $1 buys 55 rubles. I guess it used to buy, let's see. It used to buy like, it was less than 20 for sure. Yeah, it's really bad. So they're going to run out of money pretty soon. And then, of course, you know, the other part was that because of what OPEC did, then you've got like the Venezuelans and all the other – the Iranians and all the others. They're so screwed economically. I don't know what
I was just listening to Canadian radio the other day talking about how if oil stays where it is, there's going to be significant economic disruption in several parts of Canada as well.
It'll have an impact to some extent.
But, and in the, you know, because Canada's got a significant oil industry going on. And of course, we've had significant expansion of the American oil industry as well, with fracking and all this kind of stuff that is only economically viable above a certain price of oil. Yeah,
well, here's the thing. Tar sands in Canada were economically viable above $30 a barrel, right? $35. So there's no worry about that. As a matter of fact, most of the producers in the U.S., they're viable even still at these lower prices. The guys who this really impacts are some fringe producers, and it really impacts the economies of places that really, really needed oil to be over $100 a barrel. And that really right now, because of the spending, is really the Russians, the Venezuelans, the Iranians, those guys. Is it going to be yes, is there going to be less profits in oil in North America because of this? Yes. Is it going to – some people that were over-leveraged in making oil, were they going to be impacted? Yes. But I will tell you that most of the producers that are on this are still making minting a pretty damn good mint right now, even with the oil at $60 a barrel. Okay? So I'm not throwing a pity party for those guys right now yet.
Very good.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway. All right. So we covered everything else that we had. Okay. All right. Well,
you didn't mention Uber or Sony.
Oh, well.
Do you care?
But I had those below that on my list.
So forget Uber and Sony.
We are going to find out. You know, here's the thing. There's going to be the research talked about Sony. There's so much stuff out there that came out on Sony by next week. I don't know. There's been so many emails and shit coming out. I want to talk about it next week. I want to see what more people dig up on the whole Sony thing. It'll be a little bit more interesting.
Stay tuned.
We'll stay tuned on that because I think it'll get just more interesting as more stuff comes out.
Excellent. So wrapping it up. Thanks everybody for listening once again. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at imbo. And tell your friends to listen. We love to hear from you. We're glad that you guys are out there. And I had promised Bruce I would look up stats on how many listeners were currently listening to the show before the end of November. I obviously failed at that. Maybe before the end of December. We'll see. I'm taking the week off between Christmas and New Year's, so maybe then.
Okay.
And that's it. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.